This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices. On tonight's program, Deborah Bell will be talking with Greg Brown of the Pasadena Little Theater about the new production he is directing, The Wisdom of Eve, which was the basis for the Bette Davis movie All About Eve. J.D. Doyle talks with Christy Claxton about the Peace from the Porch stage she is producing at the Houston International Festival this upcoming weekend and next. Jennifer Renee interviews Massachusetts Congressman Barney Frank. Joan Devlin interviews gospel singer Melvina Harrison. Plus, This Way Out, community calendar, commentary, local news briefs, and more. So, stay with us, and I guess here we are.
Yes, here we are on April the 17th.
New time.
New time, 8 to 10. Thank you for joining us again on Queer Voices.
And who are we? This is J.D. Doyle.
I'm Jennifer Renee.
And I'm Deborah Bell.
And I'm Glenn Holt.
And that's the crew for tonight. We change around. You never know who's going to be here. And we will be talking to Greg Brown, who is currently directing The Wisdom of Eve at the Pasadena Little Theater. Pasadena Little Theater, you don't hear too much about. It's been around for 51 years. Almost as long
years.
As me. I mean, is that amazing? We think of Pasadena.
But you're so young.
I know.
Was Wisdom of Eve where All About Eve came from?
That's correct. And the musical Applause.
I don't have my queer points for nothing.
That's right. You earn it. And so we'll be getting Greg on the phone and talking to him. He's in production in rehearsal, so he couldn't join us live. You're going to have that phone interview with Barney Frank, fingers crossed and everything, because we've had to reschedule several times.
Absolutely, and I have his mobile number now, so...
you call him all the time. He's your new best friend. Yeah,
absolutely. I kept reminding him, it's tonight.
Yeah. And then, J.D., you have a special friend.
Oh, yes. I've known Christy Claxton for years, and not only is she a wonderful artist, now she's doing wonderful productions, and we're going to talk about what she's doing for the iFest this weekend and next.
Yeah, because they're celebrating Jamaica Mon.
Jamaica Mon.
Oh, it's that jug chicken.
Yeah. And wonderful artists coming up two weekends, with a field of gay, lesbian, bisexual artists, Peace from the Porch. And I have had the pleasure of sitting on Christy's porch and experiencing a lot of peace. Lovely place out in the country.
What about the whirlpool?
well, we're working on that. We'll have to get the hot tub out there. Then we'll be really happy. So first up is Greg Brown. Greg, are you with us? No, they're still getting him on the line. I love technical things.
Technical stuff.
Yeah.
We're having technical difficulties.
Yeah. I don't know if they're difficulty. We just haven't confirmed that we've gotten him on the line yet. Jennifer, you and I attended the Unity Banquet this past Saturday night. That was quite lovely.
Absolutely. And Marcy Bowers, Dr. Marcy Bowers, she's the chief surgeon at the clinic in Trinidad, Colorado. And that's the home of gender reassignments. Yes, Dr. Biber, who passed away in January. Mm-hmm. She took over his practice and for gender reassignment surgery. So She's done over 300 surgeries there now since she's moved to Colorado.
And she's caught about 2,000 babies getting born because she's an OB-GYN.
Yes.
So that's pretty interesting.
That really was. Back when she started as a doctor, she wanted to be as close to what she wanted to be as possible. So it was an OB-GYN.
I guess that was the way that
worked. That was her line Saturday night, too.
And then, of course, yesterday, being Easter, was the annual Bunnies on the Bayou. And, boy, they were there.
Did you get out with your ears and tail?
Oh, I tell you, I missed it. I had no idea of the costumes that you could come up with. One of my favorite things, somebody had a shirt, and it had the Village Peeps. And it had Peeps dressed like the Village
people.
And then there were the Brokeback Bunnies.
Oh, I bet that was cute.
Oh, I mean, we are creative and talented.
It's in the jeans.
Yeah, it's
it
something.
There's a lot more than the jeans,
They had leather
too.
Bunnies. There was a purple poodle. And a pot-bellied pig. Who knew that this was so Eastery?
I don't remember those as Easter characters.
I volunteered and was taking tickets, so I got to see just about everybody that came through the gate. And
That's always a good place to volunteer.
Yeah.
Registration or where you take the tickets. You get to see everybody.
And it goes to a good cause, all the money that gets raised. And it looked like people were having a lot of fun. It was a little too loud for me, so I was kind of on the fringes there. So, do we have Greg Brown with us?
Doesn't look like we do.
Hello.
Hey, Greg.
Yes. Hi.
Finally.
Yes.
We have you on. Now, Greg, you are the director, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Of the Wisdom of Eve. Now, tell me, how did you come about bringing this play to the Pasadena Little Theater?
Well, a number of years ago, I was supposed to direct a production of it at the Little Room Downstairs, which was a gay theater in town on Bissonnette, and that fell through, and the theater is no longer there, so I submitted it to a couple of theaters this season, and they both wanted it, but only one got it.
And that was the one in Pasadena.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. And it's called The Wisdom of Eve. Was that the name of the original play?
Yes, the play is named after the original short story, which came out in 1946 in the Cosmopolitan magazine.
Wow.
Yeah, and Ms. Orr, who wrote the play, sold it to 20th Century Fox, but kept the stage rights when she did. She must have known that she would want to do it again at some point in her life. So, of course, then the movie came about, all about Eve, when Joseph Mankiewicz directed it for 20th Century Fox.
And we, most of us, are very familiar with that movie.
Right.
I know you and I were talking because we were like, well, how is this, you know, gay, lesbian related? And we were talking about the character of Margot.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, when I saw her, I always thought she could have been a lesbian. And you said that in directing the movie,
mm-hmm.
they had kind of left an ambiguous sexuality.
Well, actually, he directed Eve as to be more ambiguous.
Oh, okay.
And also the Addison DeWitt, the kind of critic character, which was played by Jordan Sanders.
Right.
And
That's who I meant, Eve.
Yeah, that's okay.
Because she seems to be a very sweet, innocent, you know, starstruck, and coming in to do theater and becoming an assistant to this famous Broadway star, Margot Crane. And then some things start to happen.
Well, come to find out, she's not such a nice girl. She has wheedled her way into becoming Margot's secretary with the plan to then become her understudy and take over Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Which of course she does. She uses every feminine or whatever while she has, sleeping around with whoever, to get where she needs to go.
Lie, cheating, and blackmail.
Mm-hmm.
Not nice things to do.
No. She's a bit of a bitch.
Mm-hmm. And So we've seen several short stories, like two that were in the New Yorker, very famous now, Brokeback Mountain and Boys Don't Cry, originally were short stories that appeared in magazines.
Right.
And then later became movies. Now, I had not realized Applause was also the same story, the musical version.
Right. In 1970.
Mm-hmm.
That was when that came out, and there was some, there's some work about trying to get that also, because, like, Joseph Mankiewicz didn't want to give up the rights completely to the movie for the musical, and he finally relented, and so they were able to use more of the movie than just the short story.
Was the musical based more on the movie or based on the original story? The musical?
Large combination. And, of course, it was updated to 1970 for that production with, of course, Lauren Bacall.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, who replaced Lauren Bacall when she left the show was Ann Baxter, the original Eve.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And this is at the Pasadena Little Theater, and is this correct? This isn't a typo. This is in the 51st season?
Yes, 51st season. They just celebrated the 50th this past season, one of the oldest nonprofit community theaters in Texas. This is a newer location, newer for me, in that last time I worked here was 25 years ago.
Wow.
And that was in another location in Pasadena that burned down. And they have this warehouse space that they've been here probably almost 20 years now.
Mm-hmm. And the play opens on May 5th.
Right.
And will run till when?
May 5th through May 21st. It is Friday through Sunday, the first two weekends, and then Thursday through Sunday, the third weekend. Matinees on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
The evenings are 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. And how can people get tickets?
Well, they can call the theater, which tickets are just $12. And reservation number for that is 713-941-1PLT or 1758.
So that's 713-941-1758 for reservations.
Right.
And the location, 4318 Allen Genoa Road, what would be a cross street?
Closest cross street is Fairmont.
Uh-huh. That's one of the major streets
right.
into Pasadena.
Fairmont and South Shaver.
Uh-huh. It's really not as far as some people, you know, those of us that are kind of the inside the loop people. It's not really a bad trip out there.
No, it's about 12 miles maybe. Of course, it's only 5 minutes for me because I'm out this way.
Uh-huh.
Craig, is there a website where people can get information on this?
Yeah, that is Pasadena Little Theater with an R-E .org.
That's easy enough.
Oh, yeah.
And what do you think is special about this production? Tell us a little bit about some of the people that are in it. And
oh, gosh, let's see. Well, I've got people from in town that have acted professionally and around, also in this neighborhood. And I've got people coming from as far as Missouri City and where else? Westbury Square. They're just all over the city coming in. Perform the show, and a lot of people show up, of course, for the auditions when they knew that it was quote unquote all about Eve.
Mm-hmm.
So every woman
they thought it was something they could sink their teeth into.
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh. And so these are amateur performers, or some of them are
both.
Mm-hmm.
Got some that have worked professionally, Main Street stages, some TV film, and then also some newer actors.
Mm-hmm. And who's in the lead?
The lead character, depending on how you call it, Eve is played by Rose Green. Margot is Linda Kistner and Carla Guidry. We have an alternate, because we almost thought we had to understudy the role. In fact, I've asked Carla if she hasn't even thought about poisoning the original Margot.
getting a little bit too into
too
method
acting.
Yeah, the method acting there.
Yeah.
Well, the project is supported in part by a grant from the City of Pasadena Arts and Development Program, administered by the Pasadena Parks and Recreation, and Greg Brown is the director. The play opens May 5th at the Pasadena Little Theater, and if you would like tickets, please call 713-941-1758. Greg, thank you so much for being with us.
Sure, thank you. Sorry I couldn't be there personally.
Yes, well, maybe some other time.
Right.
And before we go on to our next segment, I just want to say that we do have some free tickets to give away, but you have to answer a question. And this is the question. What magazine did the short story of The Wisdom of Eve appear in before it was made into the movie All About Eve? And the number to call is 713-526-5738. So call 713-526-5738 if you know the answer to that question and would like two tickets to see the Pasadena Little Theater production of The Wisdom of Eve. Thank you for listening to Queer Voices.
Thank you.
It's like stepping off a 100-foot pole. It's like holding your breath, holding your breath, then letting go. Down.
This is J.D. Doyle, and that was Etika Lookit, and that was one of my favorite tracks from the brand new Peace from the Porch Volume 2 CD, and we are very pleased to have in our studio live the promoter, the producer, the wearing all hats person for that project, Christy Claxton. Welcome, Christy.
It's so good to see you. I'm glad you got to be here this time.
Yes.
You were sick.
You were out of a couple months ago, and I couldn't make it, right?
Yeah.
And I missed, you were performing live, and I damn well wanted to be here, but.
I know. But you sent me a CD, so.
Yes.
So I knew you got it.
I knew I got it. We're here to talk about what you got going on at the International Festival, Houston International Festival, this weekend and next. And we got to step back and say, how did the Peace from the Porch project get started?
Well, I 2 years ago, I felt like I wanted to do some type of activism that would give back to the community. So I did the first Peace from the Porch project, and it came off of a concert series that I was running called Bear Creek Concerts, which was a house concert series.
Mm-hmm.
And we performed off the front porch of my farmhouse out in Fayette County in LaGrange. So I asked artists who had performed at Bear Creek Concerts if they'd like to donate a song to a compilation CD, and we were going to give that money to the American Cancer Society. And I had about 7 or 8 artists, mostly Texas artists, actually with the exception of Etika Lookit, who was the only non-Texas artist on Peace from the Porch Volume
mm-hmm.
1. They donated music, and we produced this CD. We had a great big concert out at Bear Creek to support it, won a Texas Music Award, and raised a lot of money for the American Cancer Society. The executive director of the Houston International Festival was at the concert and was so impressed with what we were doing, he invited us to bring Peace from the Porch to Houston. So last year we produced our first Peace from the Porch stage in Houston, and it was a big success. The International Festival was really trying to move back toward the roots of what it used to be, because it had become sort of this big Lucinda Williams, Emmylou Harris.
Too commercial.
Very.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just going to be another New Orleans
Not
jazz
that anything
fest.
Is wrong with those people.
Not at all. The difference is the paycheck.
Yes.
So, here we come with our music, and it really worked out, so I was invited back this year, and in the meantime, I had decided to do a second volume of Peace from the Porch and invite not just musicians who had played Bear Creek Concerts, because I'd really sort of put that to bed, but just artists I'd met over the years that I felt like were really good people, great musicians, and really start a Peace from the Porch project that would promote independent music while supporting peace on the home front. And when I say peace on the home front, I mean so many, especially in this day and age, peace is sort of attached to Iraq and the war and this big sort of political hot topic, when really there are things right here at home. There are wars at home that we seem to ignore. We can just reach out and make a bad guy across the ocean and just ignore some things at home and the neighbors that need peace.
Peace isn't just the absence of war, and it means things like being able to walk safely in your neighborhood.
Absolutely.
Or to know that the people in your house are safe, that there's no harm coming to them.
Right. And even, you know, I even took it so far with Volume 1, is just the peace of being pain-free from cancer.
Mm.
This year, we're talking about domestic violence. This is a dark, nasty, dirty subject that polite ladies, I have seen this, I swear to you, when I say this project is about domestic violence and I talk about what that means, I see these ladies throw their hands over their mouth and gasp.
So did this drive help you in selecting songs for the album?
I don't select the songs. I ask the artist to send me a song.
Okay, but you told them the goal or the focus?
They know it's a Peace from the Porch project, and they knew that the focus would be to support agencies that support victims of domestic violence.
Okay.
And they sent their songs. This is a much darker CD.
So are there tracks on the CD that directly deal with domestic abuse?
There is definitely one, Levi Christ. He's at the very end of the CD, and it's really, the song itself is empowering and uplifting, and he's a gay man who suffered domestic violence as a very young man, and he wrote a great song called Man Out of Me, and it's a great, he sent the live version.
Yes, he used that song, I interviewed him in January, he used that song to kind of empower himself to overcome that, and it's a very powerful song.
I decided when he, you know, he immediately agreed when you put me in touch with him, that the CD itself, it's much more urban than Volume 1, and there's a darkness to it. I mean, these artists really kind of stepped up and said, we're going to talk about things, and I was really happy when Levi said, yes, I'll do this, because it really lifts up the end of the album and gives it an empowerment that it's so easy to sort of get caught up in the caustic mood that you can get when you're talking about something like domestic violence, which can feel so hopeless,
and
he really empowers it.
Yeah, it's also something we don't like to admit that exists in our community lesbians and among gay men, same sex partner domestic violence, and then also we have families, or we come from families where we may have had I don't like to even use the term domestic violence, family violence.
Oh, absolutely. We don't like to admit it, but we have to admit it. It really exists within our community, because so much of it is an extension of the other things that happen, the drug abuse, the alcohol abuse, which comes with just trying to be comfortable with who you are. And we don't live in a particularly gay-friendly part of this country, so it's really tough. You know, when I talk with people about their coming out experiences, mine really was fairly easy compared to so many. It's really easy to sort of turn that on the people that we love and in frustration and act out in violence, and you see it happen so much. I think that maybe gays and lesbians, we're more willing to talk about those dark things in our lives because we're faced with it every day, and a certain level of violence and threat that this is the reason so many gays and lesbians really stepped up to the plate and said, we want to be a part of this project. And so many lesbians, I don't know if that's because women are more connected to that subject, because we typically are more likely to say we're victims, or what that is.
Certainly more songs, to my knowledge, done by women by far than done by men that address this topic. By far. Many times.
I think women are more likely to be victims of sexual assault. And statistics of battering within domestic relationships is the perpetrator is more often male. Not that it doesn't happen the other way around.
I think it does happen. And I'm going to say, let's just go back and let's deconstruct that whole idea. And let's just talk about assault, verbal assault. And even in polite company out with your friends at a party, people are assaultive to one another, you know, and women just as bad to men. I mean, just really putting down and saying hurtful things and painful things. So that just sets itself up, and maybe men don't, when you know your wife or your girlfriend strikes you or slaps you, it's all, well, that's, you know, Bogart kind of thing, you know, it's okay, but it's not. I mean, we set that up. So, you know, maybe I'm really hoping that, of course, we'll raise money with this, but then also maybe people will be a little bit more free to talk about this.
Raise consciousness.
Yes, absolutely. Talk about this and create a dialogue that makes it okay to talk about it, and then maybe people will get out there and really help out, because there's not a lot of money out there anymore for these sort of agencies. They're fighting for every dollar they can get. I'm not pretending that I'm going to save the day, but I think it's something like the Houston International Festival. I can sell a lot of CDs.
The festival is your CD release party.
The city
is sponsoring for you.
You could put it that way, yes.
That was so nice of the city of Houston.
Wasn't it nice of the city?
Well, like they say, I'm only one, but I'm one that can do, you know, my part. So if each of us take that attitude, and you certainly have, you've certainly risen to the occasion. The artists that are on this album, are they all gay or lesbian?
No, not all of them. I'm going to try to do this off the top. Most of them are, yes. Most of them are. However, part of the Bear Creek Ensemble with the the opening song, Little Red Recorder, are not gay or lesbian. Then there, Shake Russell, Eric Taylor, are both straight men who very much wanted to be a part of this project. I want to say there are maybe a couple of more without looking at my... Oh, Smythe and Taylor. Yeah. Both are married with children. Wonderful, wonderful people. But these are all very open, inclusive people who really look at social injustice for what it is and have their own reasons for wanting to be a part of this project and do that little part.
Right.
Be that person that does that little part. I do want to say this. Every CD sold at the International Festival, every dollar of those CDs will go back to agencies in Houston.
Oh, that's
in Houston.
Very good.
Wherever these, whatever community these CDs sell in, that money stays in that community. This is not
so
like
people need to come out to the International Festival and buy lots of CDs.
Okay, so you've got 12 artists booked for the two weekends. Most of these artists are on the CD.
Most of them are, yes.
And to kind of tease the listeners, who do we have that really you think is going to excite the people who... So your music is new to them, putting her on the spot.
Oh, let me tell you, Patrice Pike will be there Saturday.
She's well known in the city.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, she puts on a great performance. She is also going to do a literary collaboration on the literary stage. This year, the Peace from the Porch stage is part of the Wordstock Cafe. So there's going to be a literary stage, my stage, together. We're celebrating all forms of writing and the word, the written word, the spoken word, and Patrice is going to collaborate with writer Elizabeth Nunez, and they're going and she's going to write a song based on a book that Nunez just recently wrote called Prospero's Daughter. So that's really exciting. I mean, because this is going to show a different depth to Patrice Pike. She's not just a cute little pixie with tattoos. This is a very intelligent woman, very thoughtful, very well-read woman. So you'll get an opportunity if you show up at the literary stage at 12:30 on Saturday to see her. A whole other side of Patrice Pike. Etika Luckett will be there the second weekend. Natalia Zuckerman will be there the second weekend. Martine Locke. These are all just really
stellar artists.
Julie Lloyd will be there the second weekend. Yashid will be there the first weekend. That's one of the few bands that still make me want to rush the stage. What a great jazz band.
Okay. I'd be so surprised. Oh, it's Chris.
Okay, where is this festival?
Downtown. Houston International Festival. They just block off downtown.
If you can find City Hall, you can find the festival.
And if you can find the corner of Bagby and Dallas, you can find the Peace from the Porch stage.
Yeah, I looked it up this evening, and I looked it up on the ifest.org site, there's a map, and I found the Peace from the Porch tent. Is it a tent?
No, it's a porch.
It's a building?
It's a porch. It's the front porch of the Heritage Society.
Is it the same location as last year?
Oh, around the corner.
Very cool.
Right around the corner. Last year, we were in the Keller Noble House, the big white...
Different house.
We're on the porch of the Heritage Society headquarters.
That you're on the porch.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
And there's two artists that I know of that are part of the CD that won't be at the festival, and they are worth mentioning.
Trip Fury, and who's the other one?
Levi Christ.
Yeah, Levi. Unfortunately, he came into the project so late into it that we didn't really have time to work on scheduling him to get in.
Okay, and let's give website information.
Okay.
Yours, Peace from the Porch site?
ChristyClaxton.com, ChristyClaxton.com. You can download the CD. It is for sale, downloadable at the download marketplace at that website, so you can purchase one. Then also BearCreekConcerts.com will give you all the Bear Creek concert information. We'll throw that big concert on May the 6th.
Okay, we want to thank Christy Claxton for telling us all this wonderful stuff about the iFest, and we're going to go out with a little more music from one of the artists. Which one did I pick? Ginger Lee or Lay?
Lee.
Ginger Lee, and you're listening to Queer Voices.
While the waters glide. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee. We welcome our guest tonight, the distinguished representative from Massachusetts, longtime friend and supporter of our community, Representative Barney Frank. Welcome, Congressman, to Queer Voices.
Thank you. I apologize for having muffed a previous call that I was supposed to make, so I'm delighted that you give me a make-up chance.
Oh, it's great. I'm excited to have you on. I wanted to say I enjoyed meeting you at the Victory Fund brunch. It was a pleasure.
That was a very nice event.
Well,
and I was very impressed with the turnout and the local people, and then also our sheriff from Dallas. It was great to hear her.
Oh, absolutely. She was wonderful. What's going on in Congress that we need to be aware of?
Well, what's happening is really happening in the country, and Congress is reflecting it, and I think it's very encouraging. Basically, we're getting a reaffirmation that America is not nearly as mean and as fond of division as the Republicans were hoping. After George Bush got reelected in 2004, the Republicans really interpreted that as a mandate to take this country back to before Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal. And I mean that quite literally. These are people who thought that America began to go wrong when Franklin Roosevelt started to do things like let people join unions or put in Social Security, et cetera.
Help people, in other words.
Yeah. You know, they say, well, after all, we always want to cut taxes and we always want to reduce government because it's the people's money and not the government's money. And of course it's the people's money, but as rational people, we understand we have two sets of needs. There are things that are best done by money in our own pockets, and we need the private sector to be prosperous to make it. But there are also things that are essential to the quality of our life that we can't do unless we pool our resources. You know, tax cuts are fun, but I never saw a tax cut put out a fire. And a tax cut doesn't feed a hungry child who, unfortunately, was born in the circumstances where she's dependent on some sense of compassion from the rest of the community. And the Bush people really thought, I believe, that the country was ready to just sort of go back to the Calvin Coolidge days. And so the first thing they did was try and dismantle Social Security, and they lost on that. And then another thing they did just a little over a year ago, really, at the time I don't think people saw the significance, but it was this effort to have Congress decide that Terri Schiavo should be kept alive despite what appeared to have been her own wishes, despite the fact that her brain function had long since ceased, despite the fact that her husband, who was the legally responsible person, said she should be allowed to just go, the fact that all the Florida courts who had heard the case decided that. There was this effort to kind of insert this right-wing insistence that we, the politicians, would make this decision. And really, since then, the country has said to the Republicans, no, this meanness isn't going to work. And that includes, by the way, the effort. I mean, so what's happened is that the right wing is losing on that. The war in Iraq has, of course, become an embarrassment to them. I voted against the war in Iraq, but even people who voted for it have to acknowledge that it's been one of the most incompetently handled major national security efforts in our history. Even Condoleezza Rice said, oh, we made thousands of mistakes. And what they really have decided to do now is, well, you know what? The economy isn't working for us in the sense that, yes, the overall economy goes up, and the average citizen's wages aren't going up, and they're losing health care and losing their pensions. People are unhappy with these budget cuts that are cutting back on transportation and housing for the elderly, environmental protection, veterans' health, etc. So let's beat up gay people again. And that's why the Senate is now trotting out again this constitutional amendment on marriage. And I think the good news is it's not working. Even where people don't agree with us that people should be allowed the rights, those of us who are gay, than anybody else has, the notion that waving that flag somehow makes up for all the other problems just doesn't work anymore.
Well, it's that old argument about separate but equal, and without giving everybody equal rights.
Oh, yeah, and they don't even make any pretense. Look, they would say that, you know, forget about marriage. These are people who believe that if you were gay or lesbian and you are fired because somebody doesn't like gay people, that that ought to be okay. Look, let's go back to your state of Texas where two men were prosecuted criminally. They were going to be sent into the criminal process because they were having sex in their own home, in private, and the cops came in and arrested them. And the Supreme Court, fortunately, overwhelmingly said that was not to be tolerated, although the justices, Bush-like, Scalia, Thomas, they said, oh, no, no, that's okay. And, in fact, the new justices probably agree with that. So, the argument is, oh, well, we just don't want you to be married. But, in fact, here's a case where they were for sending the cops in to arrest people who were expressing their affection for each other in the privacy of their own bedrooms.
They're just sticking their nose in too many places now.
Yes, and the American people have said no. Look, I think the American people are saying to the Republicans, you got it exactly backwards. We want to be able to work together to protect the environment. I think the president's refusal to acknowledge that global warming is a problem which human beings have contributed to, it's increasingly just intellectually and in public policy terms, scandalous. People don't want to see environmental deterioration. They do want to see transportation improved. So the Republicans don't want the government to be a presence where we need some collective action for the quality of our lives. And on the other hand, they do want to intrude the government in a personal, intimate sexual relations. In the cases like the Schiavo case, where people have to face this terrible decision, they want politicians to decide when you can end this terrible situation and when you can. They want to block scientists from doing stem cell research. In other words, these people are exactly the opposite, I think, of where the American people are. They want to intrude the government in the matters that ought to be private, and then they want to keep the government out where we really need to be able to work together. That's what government is. Government is a pooling of our resources. As I said, without doing that together, you don't have law enforcement. You don't have firefighting. You don't have environmental cleanup or transportation or all these other things.
What is going on with INDA in the Congress? Anything new there?
No, as long as the Republicans are in control, it will never come up in the House. Look, as long as the Republicans are in control, they will not allow anything that is remotely supportive of fair treatment for gay and lesbian people to come up. I'll tell you, here's an example. Last year, they brought up a bill dealing with crime, and they forgot to kind of seal it up with the rules. John Conyers, the senior Democrat on the Judiciary Committee, figured out that it could be a time when we could offer the hate crimes bill. And we offered a hate crimes bill, an amendment, and I insisted that it be specifically inclusive of people who are transgender, because, as you know, transgender people are sadly more often victimized than almost any other group in the society by vicious, bigoted violence. And it went through the House. We lost some Republican votes, but we got almost all the Democrats and enough for the Republicans, although most Republicans voted against it. But we got almost all the Democrats and enough Republicans so we were able to pass the amendment. The bill went to the Senate. The Republicans in the Senate have been sitting on it. And, in fact, the House just repassed the same bill this way, this time, in a way that didn't allow us to offer the amendment. In other words, when the House was given a chance to vote and voted for an amendment to the Hate Crimes Act that would cover gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people, the Republicans spent all their time trying to figure out a way to frustrate that. So as long as they are in control, these are people who believe, look, some of them are bigoted, others are just politically opportunistic, and they think the best way for them to get votes is to be beating up on gays and lesbians and transgender people. And so as long as the Republicans are in control of the House, we'll never get anywhere on any of this stuff.
Well, on that note, what do you think our chances are this November?
Oh, I think they're better than 50-50. I think it was interesting that right where you are in Houston, Tom DeLay just had to drop out. Partly, he said, because he was afraid he would lose the seat. Partly, I think, and this hasn't yet been brought up, one of the things that's happening is the Democrats, I believe, it's not been anything anybody's told me, but this is my inference, I believe the Democrats in the House Ethics Committee have been pushing to investigate Congressman DeLay. And I don't think he wants to have the House Ethics Committee do that, because I think he would almost certainly be severely rebuked, maybe even censured. And one of the things he gets from quitting is that the House Ethics Committee no longer has any jurisdiction over you. The day you quit the Congress, the House Ethics Committee doesn't have anything to do with you. It only deals with members of Congress. But the very fact that he felt in his district that he was vulnerable, now obviously he had some special reasons to be, is a sign of that. I'm here in Indiana right now working with Congresswoman Julia Carson, and I said to some of the Democrats in Indiana, well, I think you have a chance to win two seats. They said, no, three. So the Republicans are clearly nervous. And look, I can tell you this. if the Democrats win, I will be chairman of the committee that deals with financial services, banking and housing and those matters. And I am guessing that the Democrats, that a lot of people in the financial industry think the Democrats have a chance to win, because I suddenly find that I have a lot of new friends, and there's been no significant improvement in my personality.
Well, I met you. I like you now.
Well, I thank you.
What is the deal with the NSA telephone monitoring? What is that? The president's writing his own laws now.
Yes, and we should be very clear. No one that I know of objects to wiretapping where there might be terrorism. Look, we had to make a change in our thrust of law enforcement in 2001. Deterrence, which is the basic way in a free society to enforce the law. Namely, you say to people, if you do something bad, we're going to catch you and punish you. Well, that works pretty well, except when you have murderous fanatics who are ready to kill themselves. And there's nothing you can really do to threaten someone who's ready to kill himself to keep him from killing other people. So we do have to be more aggressive, and that includes some wiretapping. The issue is not whether or not they should be wiretapping, but whether or not various federal law enforcement agencies, and there are a dozen or more of them, ought to be able to wiretap anybody they want to under any circumstances without even getting a warrant from a court. Now, we set up, Congress did even before I got there in the 70s, a special court that gives warrants pretty freely, and it does them just on the request of the police, and the defendants don't know right away they're going to be wiretapped. Obviously, that would defeat the purpose. And that's worked well. So the question is not whether they should be wiretapping, but whether the law enforcement people should be given total freedom. And my view is this. Look, the law enforcement people are the good guys. I agree. They are the good guys, and they're trying to protect us. But they're not the perfect guys. And the Bush people assume that law enforcement is perfect, that it never makes a mistake, that there's never a law enforcement official who has a bias. Look at the case you had, I forget the county in Texas, where you had that rogue cop who cooked up all these bogus charges against all these black people and locked them up. Well, that's probably when you don't have a judge to make the cop say, well, what are you doing here? So, you know, we've had dozens of cases of this. People arrested on the grounds that there might be terrorists, and they say, whoops, we made a mistake. Well, I want to give them the power to protect us, but I do think that it is a mistake to just say that the police can do anything they want. And, you know, look, we just, Martin Luther King is an example. J. Edgar Hoover, who was a racist bigot, head of the FBI, hated Martin Luther King and was convinced that he was a crook and a communist, so he began to wiretap him without any court permission. Well, as a matter of fact, Martin Luther King was not a crook and not a communist, and Hoover was not able to prove that he was. What he was able to prove was that there were some personal issues involving his sex life and his relations with his wife that are none of my business, and certainly none of J. Edgar Hoover's perverted business. And he released all those things to try to discredit Martin Luther King. So, again, what these people... And by the way, well, here's what the president said. And he said this in the cases of two men named Padilla and Hamdi, two American citizens that he had arrested. He has asserted that because we are at war against terrorists, he has the right as the president to order the arrest of any American citizen who can then be held indefinitely in prison with no chance to go before a judge to prove that he was innocent. Now, he says, well, it's because we're in the war on terrorism, but everybody acknowledges this war on terrorism will go on indefinitely.
Well, you're suspending habeas corpus. That
happens. You're suspending everything.
Yeah.
You're saying that, and by the way, the Supreme Court said no to this, although they haven't said it as consistently as they should, but that's the Bush position, that he can, if he decides to, lock up any American citizen indefinitely, forever, as long as he's president, as long as he says we're fighting the war on terrorism, and you haven't got a right to go to court. Now, what we know is, in some cases, when people have had to go to court, they've had to let people go. They make mistakes. The Clinton people make mistakes. The Bush people make mistakes. 90%+ of the time, they're right. But what about that 8 or 10 or whatever percent of innocent people who are locked up? Why should we deny people a chance not to get free automatically, but to prove that there was a mistake?
Exactly. And we've been hit, the community has been hit in 17 states with different constitutional amendments banning gay marriage. And Wisconsin is about to do it again.
Yes.
In November. And I know that Senator Feingold came out directly against it. Where else do you think we've got battles to fight?
Well, I don't have the exact list. And the fact is that to be honest, I think some of the people in the LGBT community made a mistake. When we got same-sex marriage in Massachusetts, and I was very happy, and we have been defending that, and by the way, in Massachusetts, which is the one place where we've had full marriage rights, we've had them now for just about 2 years. It was May of 2004, and it has made no difference whatsoever. And in fact, whereas a couple years ago, a majority of our state legislature would never have voted for this, now a heavy majority says, leave it alone. What is the matter with you? What are you agitating about? Nobody's been hurt. And so we've shown that it can work. The problem was we had some people in our community who said, oh, you know what? If we get married in one state, it's automatically going to have to be recognized in every state. Frankly, I think that was both legally wrong and politically disastrous.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're not ready to win it in every state. And, look, I have been involved for over 30 years in fights against discrimination based on age, on gender, men versus women, on race, on disability, and, of course, on sexual orientation. Every time we try to protect a particular group against discrimination, we are told that it's going to produce chaos. And then when we're able to get the protection in, it never does. Nothing goes wrong. So that's why I thought the mayor of San Francisco was being irresponsible, frankly, when he said, okay, everybody can get married, even though California wouldn't allow it.
Yeah, it was
I said to people is, please, can we do it this way? Let's have marriage in Massachusetts.
It was too early to fight the battle because the groundwork and preparation hadn't been done.
And what we needed was to be able to show people that there is no problem. So now, because we've had no problem in Massachusetts, Connecticut is moving forward, New Jersey is moving forward. Now maybe California will do it by law. But the problem was this. Once some gay people said, oh, once there's marriage in Massachusetts, there's going to be marriage everywhere, other states said, well, we better stop it. What's now clear, by the way, is that none of those referenda are at all necessary for people who don't like same-sex marriage, because the courts have made it very clear. There will not be same-sex marriage in another state based on there being same-sex marriage in Massachusetts. Now, it may be some other states will interpret their constitutions that way. None have yet. And most promisingly, you had the California legislature finally vote for same-sex marriage, vetoed by Governor Schwarzenegger, one of these moderate Republicans who's all talk and no action on our behalf.
Yeah.
And it was a very partisan vote. I mean, Democrats aren't perfect. They're only 100% better than the Republicans on all of our issues. And it was a Democratic bill that got through in California with Democratic votes, Republicans opposing, and the Republican governor who's supposed to be a moderate, vetoing it. But at any rate, one of the things about these referenda is that they're virtually meaningless because there wouldn't be marriage in those states anyway.
Exactly. And, of course, we've got other states that have passed constitutional amendments against it. Well, Representative Frank, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well,
I hope you'll come back again.
I will, and this time we'll do it right the first time.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You're listening to Queer Voices, and this is Jennifer Renee.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
In a town of 30,000 in the hills of Tennessee. Went to church on a Wednesday, twice on Sunday. Religion is in my genealogy. Son of a preacher with his own set of secrets. Hope I learned from his history. Exactly the same and yet very much different. That is my dad and me. What would you do if your father sat you down and said, son, we share the same tendency? When he was young, he was afraid of what he wanted. Got married to be like other families. It must have been hard keeping all those secrets. I clearly understand that part. One last attempt to be close to his son. That is why he tried to open his heart. Same eyes, same nose, same blood, same name.
town of 30,000 in the hills of Tennessee. So was he exactly the same and yet very much different. That is my dad and me.
Very nice. This is JD, and that was Brian Lane Green from his brand new album, Turn That Over, Waiting for the Glaciers to Melt. That song was about he and his dad. And we have a surprise guest taking us up to the top of the hour. Jimmy Carver is going to be here. He is here to tell us about the changes.
Hi, JD. How you doing?
Hi. We're not usually on this side of the studio.
No, we're not. We're usually back there, over there where Glenn is.
Jimmy's going through the change.
I'm going through the changes, right.
And what changes are we talking about?
After Hours is going back to Saturday night.
Sunday morning.
Late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, 1 to 4 a.m.
So you were on Friday 1 to 4, and now you're Saturday
right.
1 to 4 a.m.
Yeah, we were on for about a year, and I was just thinking, we've been on the air 18 and a half years now. And
how many different time changes?
Except for this last year, we've always been on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like coming home.
So would this be an easier day to work on as far as scheduling?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because people work on Friday, so they don't normally stay up as late as they do on Saturday. Saturday is party night. So they a lot of people go out, a lot of people stay up later. I know we get a lot of listeners after that 2 o'clock hour, you know, when the bars are emptying mm-hmm. out and they're going home and they tune into After Hours to see what kind of craziness we're up to.
So that's where you get your guests then, the ones coming home from the bars?
Well, we try to sober them up. Big Roy makes a mean pot of coffee, so...
Any changes in your format at all, or just the day change?
Actually, since we've been on from 1 to 4, we have made some minor changes, because instead of having two main segments per show, we've got one main segment from 1:30 to 2:30. We've kept the bisexual segment, which comes on at 2:30 on the first Saturday of the...
So you during the month you may change segments.
No, actually, we just have four main segments now, except for the...
You mean like the first Monday of the... Or first Saturday?
The first Saturday of the month is Hatch.
And then the second is...
The second is the lesbian. The third is Black on Black. And the fourth is the Leather Line. Those have been our four most popular segments ever. And we've kept the bisexual segment on the first Saturday. It comes on at 2:30, but Gigi likes to stay for the very end of the show, so he gets to get into the round table when we have everybody in the studio.
He's been a long time co-host, hasn't he?
Yes, about 8 years now.
Ooh.
And we've started a new segment on the third Saturday. It's a poetry segment. Comes on at 2:30.
Poetry at 2:30 in the morning.
That's
oh,
right.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right.
Bring your coffee.
Queer poetry. That's right.
And who might you have showing up for that?
Oh, you name it. We've got David and Bobby, who host that,
mm-hmm.
and they bring in local talent.
Local town. I bet they do.
Yes, they do. You'd be amazed. We have some damn good poets here in Houston. And I guess the Poet Society stays up late because we've never had anybody say, no, I can't make it. You're too late.
Any special events you know of coming up as far as on your show?
Not on our show
mm-hmm.
that I know of. But then again, I'm just the co-executive producer. Chris, my other co-executive producer, is the guy who does all the work now. He does all the production. He does all the computer work. And
I've been on
the show
with Chris. He does a very good job.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
I was on the show two or three weeks ago, I guess?
Yeah, the end of last month.
Right, right. Jimmy has me on every...
Fifth Saturday.
Yeah, every time there's a month with a fifth Saturday,
yep.
That means there's no regular segment, and he says, come on down, and I play new music.
We do queer music all night long, except, you know, I may have a little something before you, but, you know.
We want to thank Jimmy for stopping by as a surprise guest.
Why, thank you very much for having me.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valinsky, Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, and Glenn Holt.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Tired today. It's because I'm tired of losing family members. Another one of us getting put out makes me think about what I wish for. All I want is an end to the violence. Even officially exist, it's no surprise to be treated like this. When at best you're a joke on a sitcom show, at worst you're the first to go. So I looked all around for a reflection of me, textbook song hooks in the movies, but I found my likeness in 1,000 wards and cells, for each one I saw treated well. Hell, I found reports with our names misrecorded, taken first from the living and then media distorted. I found our history as healers and seers, erased by fear, dear. So if they wiped out so many so fast, I gotta wonder how long I'll last. Yeah, wonder when we'll be safe again. I wonder when this'll end. Cause all I want is an end to the violence. Crosby body suffering in post silence. Truth breaking down, victims of disrespect. Put an end, love turning to ashes. No, violence is more than a gun or a drowning. It's the house or the heart that I'm not allowed in. It's here where there's love so warmly exuded, while we're still excluded. And next to exclusion, intolerance sits, pointing their discomfort at whoever's it, till no one feels better, cause we still got fear, with one less person here. But instead of learning to overcome it, folks take their fear and they run with it, and never to be the ones outdone with it, the next step's to load a gun with it. And then the pictures go down easy, because the enemies rest in peacefully. So till your neighbor's love comes easily, appease me. All I want is an end to the violence. Cause everybody suffer in a post-silence. Truth breaking down, victims of disrespect. Put an end, love turn into ashes. All I want is an end to the violence. Cause everybody suffer in a post-silence. Truth breaking down, victims of disrespect. Put an end, love turn into ashes. Downwardly mobile, glacial into 6 foot under it. Forced sterilization, intimidation, hell. Put us in the wrong jail cell, it's guaranteed predation. Debating our existence in headline news. Erasing our names whenever they choose. Services, doctors, politicians, homes are all giving us the hands-off approach. By saying that it must have been suicide again, just to make your accusations who's insane. Say it's the out of sight, you won't take the blame. All the moral one while you're pushing the shame. So I fight back by turning within. Try to learn to love my own kin skin. Why while in a position of defending myself. My soul I will nurse back to health. All I want is an end to the violence that caused me body suffer and imposed silence. Truth breaking down victims of disrespect, put an end to love, turn into ashes. All I want is an end to the violence that caused me body suffer and imposed silence. Breaking down victims of disrespect, burdens love coming to ashes. And be there for me, I will. I'll be there for you if you're. Be there for me, hey. I'll be there for you, for you. Be there for me, hey. I'll be there for you. Be there for me. Suffer in a pause silence. Truth breaking down, victims of disrespect. Put an end to love turning to ashes. Very nice.
That very personal song was by a Toronto artist named, transgendered artist named Dana Baitz, B-A-I-T-Z. It's from her album Pretty Little Shapeshifter. And that album also has a version of the Kinks' Lola done from a Lola's point of view, which is very nice.
This is Queer Voices. And now from the no longer snowy cornfields of Iowa, here is Joan Devlin.
Oh, yes. Hi. Yeah, we had tornadoes this weekend, so we kind of go from one extreme to the other around here.
Oh, well, that's good. I guess that's one way to harvest the corn.
Yeah. A little unique way. Well, I'm here tonight. I'm guesting tonight to talk to a gospel singer, up-and-coming gospel singer named Melvina Harrison. And Melvina, are you with us?
Yeah. Hi, Joan. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. I know you're out of Virginia, so it's a little bit later for you there than it is for us here.
Absolutely.
But you have a very interesting background because you are a motivational speaker. You are an instructor for the Army. You're a keynote speaker for several churches. You belong to some gospel choirs. You've toured all over the world, and now you've just released your first CD. How do you do it all?
And you know what? It's so exciting just to be able to do those different things in my life, simply because, of course, I come from a very diverse background. My mother was an elementary school teacher. She also worked in the church. My father did things in the church and other things on the outside. So really stepping outside of the box is how I was raised. My mother always told me to follow your dreams, follow your goals, and do whatever you feel like you can accomplish. And believe me, I'm not through yet.
So have you always been singing? Have you, you know, was that just always a passion of yours, or is that something that just kind of got into as you got a little bit older and decided you wanted to do something a little different, a little more fun?
Actually, I've been singing since I was about 5 years old. I'll never forget it. When I was in kindergarten, they put me on stage with a young man, and he and I sang a duet. And, of course, I was nervous, but to see the audience applauding and laughing and smiling, and I said to myself, man, this is pretty good. If I can get this kind of reaction out of people, I want to keep doing this. So actually, being a part of the entertainment field, it just grew inside of me. It's something I've been born with, and I really enjoy doing it.
So what brought you to the point of deciding it was time for you to go ahead and get out there and get a CD out?
I think I felt like it was time for me to invest in myself. Many times we sing for other people. As a matter of fact, if you read my bio, I traveled years ago with Joe Tex and Clarence Carter, Johnny Taylor, Cheaper to Keeper. And, of course, we know Joe Tex sang the song Patches. So Joe Tex did the song Skinny Legs and All, and Clarence Carter sang the song Patches. But I traveled with those guys several years ago and was always introducing them to large audiences and singing for them. And, of course, I felt like if I could do it for them, I could do it for myself. So, actually, I was raised in the church, and even though I transgressed to singing rhythm and blues, I decided I was tired of that life, and I wanted to come back and started singing gospel music, coming back to my roots. And that's why I decided to invest in myself, and I made my own CD, and I'm very proud of it.
And talk a little bit about your CD. It's been out since 2004. Or when did it actually come out?
Actually, of course, it did drop in 2004, and there were several songs that we did on that album with my church, which is the New Beach Grove Baptist Church here in Newport News, Virginia. And I'm very proud that the church choir decided to accompany me on some of those songs. One of the songs especially, which is one of my favorites, is I Know a Man Who Can. And it talks about the man that can save souls, the man that can change our life, even though we can't do it ourselves. Many of us have broken hearts, broken spirits, but only Jesus can heal. And that's the song that's really one of my favorites. And the other one, second to that one, is I've Got Joy, simply because I have joy in my heart, joy in my spirit, and when I have joy and when I have peace, I can exude that joy and that peace to the outside world.
So do you kind of live two different lives? Because, you know, you're an Army trainer, and then you're a gospel singer, and, you know, people think of singers, you know, you're glamorous, you know, you're most singers are divas. They go out, they have people waiting on them hand and foot, you know, but then you're also training with the Army, which is kind of a little different life. How hard has it been to move between those two worlds?
It's not difficult at all, Joan. As a matter of fact, you saw me in New Jersey when I, we were in Newark, New Jersey when I gave that training for the Army and for some of the people that you work with. Actually, I enjoy both because if you noticed, because I was teaching, I was in front of a group, it's still almost the same type of thing because I was motivating you guys while I was encouraging you to learn the material. So anytime you're standing in front of a group, whether it's speaking or singing, it's still entertaining.
Now, Malvina Harrison, how can people get your CD?
All right, my CD is on the web. It's www.cdbaby.com/Malvina.
And the CD title is I've Been Delivered?
Yes, it's I've Been Delivered. As a matter of fact, that's the title track. And also, they can do a Google search and just put in I've Been Delivered, and it'll pop up on a Google search as well as putting in my name, Malvina Harrison. It's also on the web under TowerRecords.com.
Now, how have the sales of the CD been going, and do you have any plans to release another CD?
Yes, absolutely. The sales are going very well in this regional area because, of course, I do a lot of performing in Virginia, North Carolina, in Maryland and the Washington, D.C. area. So, of course, the sales are going extremely well in this area. Now, I am in the studio now. I'm working on my second album, and we're hoping to release that sometime in the fall.
And has that have a title yet or still in work?
Well, we are thinking of the title track, The Lord of the Dance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people like to dance, a lot of people like to move, and it says in the Bible that we are to worship and to praise with the dance and with the cymbal and the harp and the music. And so with changes, the way things are moving now, it's no longer just a traditional song with the old folk church, the way our grandmothers used to praise God in the church way back when. We have young people who are praising God in a more contemporary way. And many people even like to dance and move in church. So we are considering the title track, The Lord of the Dance.
Well, that sounds great. And you said it's in the studio, so it'll be out this fall?
Yes, yes. We still have a couple of touching ups to do, but I'm still in the studio, so we're making those adjustments. And hopefully sometime this fall it'll be coming out.
Now, do you see yourself doing this for the rest of your life? I mean, do you think you're going to be like, if I talk to you 5 years from now, are we going to be talking about like your 25th CD, or is this just still, is this kind of like a sideline? What are your plans for the future?
Well, actually, I don't see myself making 25 CDs or more, maybe about two or three others. My main focus is to be able to accomplish my goals and my dreams, because my dream is to be able to send my music out into the world. I want to leave a legacy behind. I don't want to just leave this world and people say, Melvina who? You know, even if 10 or 100 people speak my name 5-10 years after I've gone, I want to be able to leave a legacy behind, to leave some of my music behind, and leave some of my encouragement and wisdom to young people as I travel along this way. You know, there's a song years ago, if I can touch somebody or if I can help somebody as I travel along this way, then my living is not in vain. And that's what I want to do, leave a legacy behind.
How do you incorporate your music? Because I noticed along with the Army training, you're a speaker for many different causes: teen pregnancy prevention, violence prevention, distance learning, positive thinking. I mean, are you able to incorporate your music into some of these motivational speeches or seminars that you give?
Yes. Many times I am, especially when I'm speaking to the teen groups and the women focus groups. Many of the women are hurting. A lot of the groups that I've spoken with are women who have been affected by domestic violence, or women who have a low self-esteem. So, of course, when I talk to those women, I'm talking about self-empowerment, how to empower themselves as women, and how to believe in themselves as women. So many times my music is also a part of that focus. One of the songs on there, I've Got Joy, is one of the songs I enjoy singing. And it's an upbeat, up-tempo song for people to get their hands clapping and to be moving. And you know yourself, Joan, if you speak positive thoughts, if you say, I feel great, I feel wonderful, I feel excellent, many times the brain will be able to stimulate that information, and you do begin to feel better and better. Whatever you speak, many times your mind and your body will follow.
Well, what would you say to someone that would say, well, Melvina, you're Melvina, you're a gospel singer, you have a CD, you're a motivational speaker, you're just all that, but I'm just me, and I don't have anything, and I don't have any talent, and I don't know what to do with my life? How would you motivate someone along those lines? Because I've noticed when I work with battered women, that's kind of what you're dealing with. They just really believe that they don't have any, even like a kernel of anything to hold on to sometimes.
And you're absolutely right. I've seen it. I've even been there. We have to believe in ourselves. And for someone to look at me as I am now, I haven't always been this way, because I've also been an abused wife. I've also been a battered wife. And I've also been a person who had a low self-esteem. But one day, I looked in the mirror, and God told me, he said, you are somebody. And God told me that he loved me. And from that moment on, he picked me up, and I began to encourage myself. See, that's something we got to do. We can't wait for other people to encourage us all the time. Because you know yourself, Joan, people will let you down.
Uh-huh.
But I won't let me down. And you won't let you down. So many times we have to look in the mirror and we have to say, look, I'm going to be somebody. From this day, it may take a little bit at a time, step by step, but I'm going to be somebody and I'm going to lift myself up, even if it takes years, but I'm going to do it. You have to believe in yourself. And that's what I would tell someone. You have a gift. Everybody has a gift. Whether it is a gift of writing, a gift of singing, a gift of poems, a gift of administration, a gift of decorating, flowers, being the culinary art. Everyone has a gift. And we just need to be able to manifest that gift and be able to bless other people in the world with our gift. Because once we bless others, they will begin to bless us.
Well, Melvina, I want to thank you very much for being on our program tonight. We have been speaking with Melvina Harrison. Her CD is I've Been Delivered. And Melvina, can you tell us one more time how people can get your I've Been Delivered CD?
Yes, you can go on the web. It's cdbaby.com/Melvina, M-E-L-V-I-N-A, or you can do a Google search, I've Been Delivered, or Melvina Harrison.
Great. Well, Melvina, thank you again so much for being with us tonight. You are listening to Queer Voices on 90.1 KPFT FM Houston.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
And that was Patrice Pike, another one of the artists you'll get to hear this weekend at the International Festival. And now, stay tuned for This Way Out.
We've been tricked. We've been bamboozled. We've been led astray.
It is time for African Americans to talk. It is time for us to stop allowing other folks to define our agenda and our priorities.
In 1913 and 1914, Casement continued to campaign for a united and free Ireland.
Ireland has no blood to give to any land, to any cause but that of Ireland.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Nigeria considers jailing queer supporters. Right-wing Republican false promises to African Americans are revealed. And a gay Irish patriot falls from human rights champion to embarrassing traitor. Those stories and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 15, 2006. The Nigerian government has already proposed what could be the world's most draconian anti-lesbi-gay legislation, but it was made even worse this week during a first reading in the country's Senate. The measure outlaws gay and lesbian marriage and makes advocacy for GLBT equality a crime, but it's been expanded to punish anyone who supports or celebrates same-gender unions. According to the Vanguard newspaper, the bill imposes 5-year prison terms for violations of the proposed law, including jail time for those who witness, celebrate with, or support couples involved in a homosexual relationship. One section of the bill states that, for the avoidance of doubt, only marriage entered into between a man and a woman under the Marriage Act or under Islamic and customary laws are valid and recognized in Nigeria. Under the measure, Nigeria would also deny recognition of marriage licenses legally issued to same-gender couples in other countries. The clear intent of the bill is to make all favorable public discourse on homosexuality illegal there.
But the Vatican's grip on Italian politics might be on the wane. The center-left coalition led by Romano Prodi, who promised to introduce a civil partnership law for same-gender couples if elected, appears to have won a very narrow victory in this week's national elections. The current government of conservative Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has close ties to the Vatican, and critics charge Pope Benedict XVI with meddling in civil politics in the weeks leading up to the election, with speeches repeatedly condemning abortion and same-gender unions. Those were big social issues with voters, leading several thousand pro-queer and pro-choice Italians to demonstrate in the streets during the campaign. Berlusconi is refusing to concede defeat, however, and is challenging the close vote, which could delay issuance of the final results for several weeks. The International Lesbian and Gay Association, or ILGA, reported that 5 lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender candidates were also elected to the Italian parliament, including Vladimir Luxuria, who could be Europe's first transsexual elected official. ILGA also believes that a Prodi-led government would improve Italy's anti-discrimination legislation and expand its hate crime laws to include sexual orientation and gender identity.
A Serbian immigrant is being allowed to stay in Britain because deporting her would breach her right to a family life with another woman, according to a report this week in the London Telegraph. The Court of Appeal ruled that 54-year-old Emine Krasniqi can remain in the country while the refugee status of her 24-year-old partner, Albana Lamage, is decided. Krasniqi, an Albanian from Serbia, and Lamage from Kosovo, fled to Britain separately after each was raped by Serb troops. They now live together in Birmingham, raising Lamage's child in what Lord Justice Sedley described as a stable and committed family. Adjudicator V.A. Osborne heard evidence from both women and found that although there was a sexual component to their relationship, it was not the central force. She said she was satisfied that their relationship is an exclusive and enduring one. Lord Justice Sedley, along with the Court of Appeals Lady Justice Arden and Lord Justice Chadwick, said it was now conceded that neither woman would be able to live with the other, either in Serbia or in Kosovo.
And bowing to pressure from members of parliament and international human rights groups, Dutch Immigration Minister Rita Verdonk has agreed to extend her stay of a controversial plan to deport Iranians who are lesbian, gay, or Christian, according to a report by Expatica News. Lawmakers from parties aligned with Verdonk's own party in the coalition government indicated this week that they would join the main opposition Labour Party in fighting Verdonk's plan to send such refugees back to Iran. Verdonk has claimed that conditions in Iran are safe enough for lesbian gay people if they keep a low profile, even though homosexual sex is punishable by death there. But deporting them would result in certain torture, and the threat of death is very real, according to Scott Long, director of Human Rights Watch's Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Rights Program. Verdonk said the moratorium would remain in force until the Dutch Foreign Ministry can complete an investigation into conditions in Iran for gays and lesbians and converts to Christianity. According to Expatica, that inquiry is likely to last until August or September.
Reports are just coming in from Poland about 5 days of sleep-ins by protesters at the Warsaw gay club La Madame in late March as police attempted to close it down. At times, more than 200 demonstrators took part. In the early morning hours of March 31st, however, when only about 50 people were inside the building, police conducted another raid and shut it down. Activists told veteran journalist Doug Ireland that police beat some of the club's defenders, who had chained themselves to pipes and railings or went limp as they were hauled away. Ireland reported that others regrouped across the street and chanted, "It's not over, it's just the beginning." The city owns the building, and officials said the club had to be shut down because the space was needed for another unspecified use. But the Polish Green Party, whose headquarters were at La Madame, said the club was closed because the right-wing government in Poland wanted to shut down this meeting point for civil society, where artists, political activists, homosexuals, feminists, and globalization critics met.
But about 400 people marched in the third Pride Parade in Phnom Penh, Cambodia, on March 31st. Parties and other events continued through the weekend. According to a report by the German wire service Deutsche Presse Agentur, the parade was organized by the Salt Lounge Bar and sponsored by Population Services International, Family Health International, and the Women's Network for Unity.
There was both good news and bad news for equality activists in three U.S. states this week. In Kentucky, on the same day that he declared Diversity Day in the state, Republican Governor Ernie Fletcher issued an executive order removing sexual orientation from categories protected from discrimination in state employment. The policy bans bias based on race, color, national origin, sex, age, religion, veteran status, and disability. Sexual orientation had been added in 2003 by the state's outgoing Democratic governor. Fletcher's office told reporters that the governor believed removing sexual orientation was necessary to avoid conflicts with federal anti-discrimination workplace laws, which don't include protections based on sexual orientation. However, critics charged Fletcher with pandering to the religious right as he gears up for a re-election bid.
But an Indiana appeals court ruled this week in favor of allowing same-gender couples to jointly adopt children. Adoptions by unmarried couples in the state were previously approved only if the child was the natural offspring of one partner or had already been adopted by one of them. The victorious lesbian couple, who are in their mid-30s and have been together for more than 11 years, adopted an infant girl in April 2005, but a county judge had invalidated the adoption. Patricia Logue, senior counsel for Lambda Legal, which represented the couple, described them as elated, telling reporters that they are hoping the state drops the case so they can get on with their lives.
And the California Supreme Court this week again refused to hear an appeal challenging the state's domestic partner laws. Opponents had appealed a January ruling from the 3rd District Court of Appeal in Sacramento, charging that California's laws make domestic partners equivalent to spouses and therefore violate the voter-approved ban on same-gender marriage, Proposition 22, which states in its entirety, "Only marriage between a man and a woman is valid or recognized in California." According to Kate Kendall of the National Center for Lesbian Rights and co-counsel in the case, domestic partnership is not marriage, and the court wisely denied review of misguided and underhanded attempts to distort the language of Proposition 22 and strike down validly enacted legislation that protects lesbian and gay people and their families. These families will never be truly safe, however, noted Jeffrey Kors of the advocacy group Equality California, until full marriage equality is achieved.
And finally, the Lyndale United Church of Christ in Minneapolis, Minnesota, decided this week to stop performing civil marriages for heterosexuals because they're denied to gay and lesbian couples. The 1.3 million member United Church of Christ endorsed a resolution in support of same-gender marriage during its national meeting last year. Lyndale's Reverend Don Portwood says he'll officiate at religious ceremonies for both opposite and same-gender couples, but that, "I will no longer sign marriage licenses as an agent of the state of Minnesota until the state of Minnesota recognizes the loving commitment of all couples." The congregation's April 9th vote mirrors similar actions in a handful of churches across the country, including some in the Unitarian Universalist Church. And as we reported last week, Logo, the MTV network's owned cable channel specifically targeting the U.S. GLBT market, has refused to air a welcoming TV spot by the United Church of Christ that specifically includes gays and lesbians, claiming that it disparages other religions. This week, two rivals, Hear TV and the Q Television Network, announced that they'd be running the spot at no charge. As the Christian world's Easter observances conclude around the globe, we're reminded of everything Jesus himself had to say about homosexuality.
And that's News Wrap for the week ending April 15th, 2006. Written this week by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
The saga of early 20th century gay Irish patriot Sir Roger Casement continues with the dawn of the Great War and the ill-fated Easter Uprising later in the program. In a new report called False Promises, How the Right Deploys Homophobia to Win Support from African Americans, the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force Policy Institute charges that the Republican Party's efforts to win black votes are fundamentally disingenuous. Task Force policy analyst Nicholas Ray explains how the data from such sources as the NAACP and the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights was used to develop the report's conclusions.
To determine what any party ought to be addressing if it wants to be the political home of African Americans, we analyzed African American polls conducted by Black America's Political Action Committee and the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies. And what we find is that the four priorities most often identified as important by poll respondents were the economy and jobs, healthcare and prescription drug coverage, education, and social security. Conversely, fewer than 1% of African Americans said that morals or any moral crisis was the most important issue facing America. Indeed, 47% of African Americans support same-sex marriage or civil unions. We find that conservatives score poorly on measures of attention to the real concerns of African Americans. And these conservative politicians have been joined by allies from the evangelical Christian right. For example, Tony Perkins leads the Anti-Gay Behemoth Family Research Council, a group that has been heavily involved in outreach efforts to religious communities, especially via African American churches and ministers. But Perkins' personal record on issues of concern to the African American community is dubious at best. In contrast, there are a great many African American leaders who have spoken eloquently on behalf of full equality for gay and lesbian Americans. Representative John Lewis of Georgia, a pioneer of the civil rights movement, has remarked, "I've heard the reasons for opposing civil marriage for same-sex couples. Cut through the distractions, and they stink of the same fear, hatred, and intolerance I have known in racism and bigotry." And as recently as February of this year, Joseph Lowery, co-founder with Martin Luther King Jr. of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, cautioned African-American Christians against viewing civil rights as solely an African-American issue, saying, "Don't ever let the Constitution be used to take away rights. You can't say you're for equal rights and then make an exception."
There is a need for African-Americans
for us to gather our forces now in the face of the demonization of any part of our community. And that certainly includes same-gender loving African Americans.
The outspoken Reverend Dr. Yvette Flounder is presiding bishop of Refuge Ministries, a San Francisco inner-city-based church founded in the Baptist, Methodist, and Pentecostal traditions. She issued a clarion call for African American communities to begin a discourse about sexuality.
We are injuring our own people in bed with the religious right and in many ways with folks whose agenda does not include us. We are injuring our own people, those who have historically given so much to our community and our churches, and their mothers and fathers and families are so wounded by this rhetoric. When we experience the use of the Bible to defend hatred, we must remember that we were once held in slavery and denied the right to marry interracially by narrow interpretations of Scripture. I am calling on the laity, the mothers, the fathers, and the community to speak out and advocate for an African-American family meeting. We need each other. None of us are expendable. And I, for one, will not allow this racist political power grab to separate me from my community. This is my community. Not Karl Rove's community, not George Bush's community. My community. This is my DNA. And the fight for civil rights cannot belong to any one race or community. But it is because we have struggled that we as African Americans must help others who are in the struggle for the inalienable rights to justice and the pursuit of happiness. Lou Sheldon, James Dobson, and the like have no record of concern for the civil rights of African Americans until our struggle could be used for their purposes. They are abusing the African American civil rights struggle. They fail to realize that some of us are both same-gender-loving and African-American simultaneously. I hate to hear Martin Luther King and Coretta King's names even come out of the mouths of people who fought against what they believed and now use them as a wedge. It is time for African-Americans to talk. It is time for us to stop allowing other folk to define our agenda and our priorities and to use our weaknesses. I am not afraid of that conversation, and I am not afraid of my people.
It certainly should be a wake-up call to all African-American activists for social justice, racial justice, and change in this country.
The kind of research the task force has done is long overdue, as far as National Black Justice Coalition Executive Director Alexander Robinson is concerned.
The religious conservatives and Republicans that have mounted this campaign, I am reminded of words from a film that we've been tricked, we've been bamboozled, we've been led astray by a group of individuals who have never had the well-being and the advancement of the black community at heart. I pray will be an opportunity for us to talk to our allies, African American ministers, African American elected officials, individuals in the media, to really come together and work, gay, straight, bisexual, same gender loving African Americans, along with our heterosexual counterparts and allies in every community, to combat the kind of bigotry, the kind of divisive politics that has been at play, and really create a world in which, and a country in which, it is safe for all individuals, regardless of their race, sexual orientation, sexual identity. It is safe for us to participate openly and honestly in all of the sectors of our lives and in our families.
That was Alexander Robinson of the National Black Justice Coalition. To find more online about the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force Policy Institute report, False Promises, log on to thetaskforce.org. Information about Refuge Ministries can be found at sfrefuge.org, and the National Black Justice Coalition is at nbjcoalition.org.
Hi, this is Margaret Cho, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
In the first two parts of our four-part dramatized biography of early 20th century gay humanitarian and controversial Irish patriot Sir Roger Casement, we've heard about his dual roots in Irish Catholic and Protestant households and his exceedingly charming and adventurous nature. As an agent for the British Foreign Office, Casement investigated and reported on the brutality of King Leopold's rubber trading operation in what was then the Belgian Congo, all the while detailing his sexual escapades in diaries that would ultimately come back to haunt him. After receiving considerable public accolades for the reforms his work forced in Africa, he was next sent to South America, where he encountered Amazon rubber traders and their equally horrific treatment of forced native laborers. His reports to the Foreign Office were so strong that just the threat of their publication moved the Peruvian government to institute changes. Casement was knighted for his efforts, and while he accepted the honor, he felt a traitor to Ireland. He devoted more and more of his energies to the home rule movement, speaking out for a unified and independent Ireland. Producer Hugh Young and narrator Barry Empson now continue the story.
The German ships were lying there with rifles in galore. Up came a British ship and spoke, no Germans reached the shore.
We present The Broken Heart of Ireland, The Life and Death of Sir Roger Casement. Part 3, Ourselves Alone.
No German foot shall e'er pollute the lonely banner's strand.
In 1913 and 1914, Casement continued to campaign for a united and free Ireland. He was also secretly arranging for arms supplies to the south, including from Germany. He sailed to America to promote the cause among the Irish there. But then Britain went to war with Germany. Home rule was delayed, and Casement increasingly felt that Ireland should not support Germany, but at least not support England against Germany. And he tried to enlist German support for nationalist movements, not only in Ireland, but also India and Egypt. The military attaché in Washington, Franz von Papen, was interested, and the idea arose of forming an Irish Legion from Irish prisoners in Germany. Casement decided to sail for Germany, financed by the Irish-American Clan na Gael. He might have returned to Ireland, but he had rather burned his bridges in a signed letter to the Irish Independent newspaper.
Ireland has no blood to give to any land, to any cause but that of Ireland. No Irishman can join the Allied millions now attacking Germany in a war that, at best, concerns Ireland not at all.
In New York, Casement had been accosted by a young Norwegian sailor, Adler Christiansen. Christiansen boasted he could speak German, and Casement decided to take him to Germany with him, by way of Norway, as interpreter, agent, and playmate. Christiansen played an elaborate double game with Casement. He told him that he'd pretended to plot against his life with a British minister to Germany in Norway, and perhaps he really had done so. He certainly kept the British legation informed about Casement's identity, views, destination, and a German cipher he held, all for a price, and he gave them their first hint of his master's sexuality. Christiansen was 24, 6 feet tall, strongly made, clean-shaven, fair hair, blue or grey eyes, with a gap between his front teeth. This description is from the British minister, who added, has a fleshy, dissipated appearance, though that may be homophobic hindsight. Casement noted,
I am glad I brought him indeed. He is a treasure.
In Germany, Casement did secure a statement that Germany wouldn't invade Ireland except as an army of liberation. Only about 50 men were recruited for the Irish Brigade, and Irish patriots in America tried unsuccessfully to dissuade Casement from continuing. In Ireland, a rising was planned for Easter 1916, and the Germans agreed to send 20,000 rifles and ammunition. Not nearly enough, Casement thought, and with none of the German officers that the leaders of the revolt were expecting. He felt he must warn them not to proceed, or if he failed, to die with them. He sailed ahead of the arms ship in a submarine. It broke down, or seemed to, and they had to go back. The Germans didn't want Casement to arrive before the arms. The voyage, when it finally happened, was horrible. The sub went on the surface, and Casement was badly seasick. When they arrived, there was no sign of the arms ship, nor anyone on shore to meet them. Plans had been changed too late for the U-boat captain to be told. All he could do was put Casement and two others ashore in a tiny dinghy and sail away before dawn. The dinghy overturned, then grounded on a sandbank. By the time they reached the shore, Banner Strand near Tralee, Casement was exhausted and lay in the water, unconscious. He was ecstatic, though, home in his beloved island. While the others went for help, Casement was found by a passing policeman. The dinghy, which the others had failed to sink, gave him away, and he was taken into custody. A German train ticket, a diary, though not one recording anything sexual, and a code were found in his clothing. Before they found out who he was, he asked a priest to send a warning to call off the rising. As it happened, the message didn't get through, but the Easter morning parade of volunteers was called off anyway. Hearing of this, the English were taken off guard, and English troops were given time off to go to the races. So when the rising did begin on Easter Monday, it was far more successful than it would otherwise have been. 2,000 rebels held out for almost a week, in Dublin at any rate. Germany and Casement were blamed. Its echoes reverberate over Ireland today. In 1918, Sinn Féin, adopting many of Casement's ideas, swept to power, set up their own administration, and in 1921 signed a treaty with Britain granting self-government in the south. But the leaders of the Easter Rising were court-martialed and shot within a few days. Casement was sneaked into England and subjected to a show trial, a travesty of justice. One reason was that no reputable barrister was willing to defend a traitor in wartime. The other was Casement's diaries. Casement's supporters included the Irish playwright George Bernard Shaw, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and pioneer socialists Sidney and Beatrice Webb. Shaw wanted to write a speech for Casement, arguing that though the facts were proven, they didn't amount to treason because he was Irish, not English. But the only barrister willing to take the case, an Irishman, Alexander Sullivan, who had the eyebrows and jowls of an unusually sad bloodhound, wanted to take another line, a quibble in the definition of treason which dated from the reign of Edward III. He had his own fish to fry. A legal argument would improve his chances of admission to the English bar. It was doomed, and Sullivan had to swing his argument around to Shaw's, but he did it so badly that he broke down. He'd begun to remind the court of other Irish patriots and came close to implicating the prosecutor, Attorney General F. E. Smith, in statements as treasonable as Casement's. Sullivan had to apologize abjectly and shortly withdrew from the case, leaving Casement to a junior. And next week, the end of Casement's troubles and the beginning of Ireland's.
Said he, I'm Roger Casement. I have come to my native land, and I mean to free my countrymen on the lonely Banner Strand.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, John Beaupre, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, and Hugh Young and Barry Empson contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on planetout.com. There's also a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some unique This Way Out queer history, music, and culture CDs that you can own as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For our associate producer, Lucia Chappelle, and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 4NAG, Yeppoon, Queensland, WZKW, Kingsville, Ohio, KSOW, Cottage Grove, Oregon, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.
We want to thank tonight's guests, Greg Brown with the Pasadena Little Theater production of The Wisdom of Eve, Christy Claxon, and don't miss Peace in, from the Porch stage at the Houston International Festival this weekend and next. And again, Congressman Barney Frank for his interview and all. Let's see. And Melvina Harrison and this is Jennifer Nate. And for next week?
Next week. Lots of JD on next week. We talked about the Peace in the Porch series. One of the artists is Martine Locke. She's an Australian, and she'll be my interview guest next week. And that's kind of in prep to also a Diva concert that she'll be performing at April 28th. That's a Friday at the Gay Community Center. In the second hour next week is the fourth Monday of the month. That means it's Queer Music Heritage. This is part two of my special series on those singing drag queens.
I love the first one.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. You'll hear people like Lady Bunny, and stay tuned next week for that.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at its new time, 8 p.m., here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston, with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, and Jack Valensky, with remote correspondents Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned in the show, visit queervoices.org. Some of the music you heard is listed or available on J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.org. Be sure to listen every Saturday night at midnight for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Would you like to hear more of your favorite KPFT programs and less fundraising? Well, you can, but it's up to you to make it happen. KPFT's next on-air membership begins May 8th. With your pre-pledge gift, you help shorten the on-air drive by 1 hour, 1 day, or even more, so we can get you back to the KPFT programming you enjoy. We can shorten the on-air drive by 1 day for every $20,000 we receive. We'll remove fundraising days and hours as quickly as you and other KPFT listeners buy them back. That's our pledge to you. So, send your gift today or make a secure contribution online at kpft.org before the on-air drive begins on May 8th. Remember, every gift makes a difference in getting back to KPFT's regular programming sooner. Thank you for your continued and generous support of KPFT Houston.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.